Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
If anybody knows who his PR is, perhaps they could put me in touch, because if I could get banned from going to America, and I'm not planning to go to America, it'd be great, wouldn't it? I wouldn't agree with some of his views, but hey, listen, he says he's got freedom to express them. Have we lost the plot in this country?
Michael Savage!
Right on, bro.
We with you, bro. We got your back. We're going to stand with you. We'll show them over there with their stiff upper lips. We'll show them a thing or two right here, right now.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. I'm exhausted from it, but I love it. Now, we open with my assistant, I hate to call him anything less than my assistant, Teddy the Poodle. They call him a toy poodle. I don't like the word toy. To me, you know, he's a poodle. What toy? He doesn't know he's a toy. Barking to Rule Britannia, which I thought was cute. We went into a chat show, which is what they call it over there, chat show about the banning of Michael Savage from the UK. And these guys have it exactly right. I don't know who James Whale is, but he's a new friend of mine. He says he'd like to know who my public relations agent is. He said, I don't agree with some of his views, how they draw out the vowels or consonants. But have we lost the plot here in this country? You're darn right you have. When you have a pothead in the home office there, whose husband downloads pornography and bills it to the taxpayers of Britain, they're cheap. You know something I've noticed about libs? Libs are very cheap. And I don't understand the connection. There's something about anal retentiveness. It's very Freudian, but I can't get into it right now. Let's listen to clip two from England.
I'm just slightly puzzled that our democracy is so fragile that we can't survive.
You've forgotten something. You have forgotten that at this particular moment there's something going on called an investigation into MPs' expenses, haven't you? You've forgotten all about that.
We haven't forgotten
that. You've forgotten all about that, and then suddenly this pops up and, oh, well, we'll ban him.
See, they're saying him, but they don't say Michael Savage. Now, let's go to three and hear the next one.
I think it's completely wrong. I mean, my view is quite straightforward. We've got a lot of laws about racial hatred and all the rest of it now.
Exactly, an incitement to violence.
Absolutely. If somebody breaches the law, you have them up. If they don't, you let them in. I think it's absurd to produce this kind of second list, the kind of McCarthy list of unacceptable
opinions.
Well,
it isn't kind of McCarthy.
I don't like that at all.
It seems like his name's been plucked out of a hat.
You know, these are the English that I grew up admiring. Who are these wonderful people? Shirley Williams, love you. And then there's this man, Andrew Neil. Love you. Who are these folks? They're wonderful. They got it exactly right. This is the England I grew up admiring. It gets better in four.
But he doesn't want to come over here. He never even applied to come over here.
The assumption by our Home Secretary is that he was planning to come.
She must be psychic.
Some of the videos that the Home Secretary's husband has been watching, he'd be banned before we banned disc jockeys.
They're supposed to be banned in some cases.
Oh, that's very funny. Maybe she's psychic from her husband's videos. See, now we're getting arch. We're getting back to the real intellect that we grew up to admire about. I mean, those of us who are Anglophiles, and I've been an Anglophile, I must admit. Now let's go to 05.
I mean, is it a cover? Here's the cynical response. That she's in the process of banning a number of what the tabloids call preachers of hate.
Mm. Yes.
And they're mainly Islamic.
They are.
So to balance it, you ban some right-wing shock jock from America.
I think there's a good deal in that.
Well, why do they always refer right-wing? Have you heard the media, anyone in the media use the word left-wing? Have you noticed this? Now, you hemorrhoid with ears on Fox, pay attention. Pay attention now. I know you put the booze down, and I know your ears are cocked real sharply. Hemorrhoid with ears on Fox News, who copies everything I do. Take this down, Junior. They use the word right-wing shock jock, right-wing this, right-wing politicians. Cheney's a right-winger. I'm a right-winger. Have you heard the word used recently, left-wing, with reference to Obama or any of his minions? Of course not. Now let's go to clip six.
Who, what was it? Voltaire? I always forget. You know, I may disagree with you, but I'll defend your right to say it.
Yes, that's correct.
Paraphrase
that was,
him.
Well done. Isn't it was Voltaire.
Voltaire. Yeah. Wasn't that what my philosophy professor would be proud of me? Wasn't that what our democracy is based on?
Well, not really, is it? Because we have so many rules and regulations about what we can say, when we can say it, how we can say it, that we're so wound up with political correctness and fairness that what we actually do is, if anybody is likely, I'm amazed you're still on anyway, if anybody says anything that might actually upset someone, then they can't, because you might upset somebody.
You know, I'm thinking of moving to England now and getting a job in talk radio over there or talk television on BBC because it sounds so pleasant. It is just sounds wonderfully polite and pleasant. I would probably live an extra 2.3 years if I gave up talk radio in America because this is a brutal combat sport here. Those folks, they support each other. They have fun. It's delightful. I'm sure they go out for darts or whatever they do over there. I don't know if they still play darts in England, but I would imagine someone still must play darts in England. What a fun thing. Okay, look, I'm exhausted from all of this. I can talk about pre-Jean, the beautiful whatever she ran for, and Donald Trump. Good for him. He did the right thing. I could talk about the pilot who was flunked every exam and then still flew the plane into the ground. Any horrible story. Not only did he lose his life and the co-pilot, the woman, I know women fly and all that, but not only are they both dead, but now their reputations are dead with them. Terrible, terrible thing. Terrible thing. Oh, by the way, I've coined a new word for you out there. Again, this is to that special new person at Fox News who listens very carefully. He's a very good student. Although he only went to high school, I'm sure he could have gotten through college with a degree in tire changing. Pay attention now. Here it comes. Hemorrhoid with ears. The new word is homeophobe. Are you a homeophobe? Now, we've all heard the word homophobe. We know what that is. We've been cauterized with the word homophobe. But I realized that because I once wrote a book in the early 80s on homeopathy that I'm banned in England. It could be because they are homeophobic. Joke. Look it up. Find out what homeopathy is and what allopathy is and get back to me, okay? 1-800-449-8255. There are some amazing articles that I found today. I put up on the website. And this I don't understand. Obama threatens to limit U.S. intelligence with Brits. What? The Obama administration says it may curtail Anglo-American intelligence sharing if the British High Court, emphasis on the middle word, discloses new details of the treatment of a former Gitmo detainee. Yes, it is a high court indeed, very high indeed. U.S. will pay $2.6 million to train Chinese prostitutes to drink responsibly on the job. I'm not making this one up. This is where your tax dollars have gone. We got this from CNS News, and I said, I can't believe this. That's right. The National Institute of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism, a part of the NIH, I told you the NIH was a worthless body of petty politicians, will pay $2.6 million in U.S. tax money to train Chinese prostitutes to drink responsibly on the job. You're not going to believe this. The grant was made last November, and it refers to prostitutes as female sex workers, or FSW. They don't use the word prostitute or hooker, and their pimps as gatekeepers. So the next time you see a guy with a fur hat and a fur coat somewhere in a cheap neighborhood in America, if they still wear that kind of thing, do not refer to them as pimps. Refer to them as gatekeepers, because that's the new phrase from the National Institutes of Health. The grant abstract says, previous studies in Asia and Africa and our own data from SFWs, female sex workers in China, suggests that the social norms and institutional policy within commercial sex venues, as well as agents overseeing the FSWs, i.e. the gatekeepers, defined as persons who manage the establishments and or sex workers, can you believe this, are potentially of great importance in influencing alcohol use and sexual behavior among establishment-based FSWs, close quote. That got them $2.6 million. That was done last November. I told you the NIH is a corrupt body. It is as corrupt as both parties in America. If you care to comment on any of these topics, I don't think I want to talk about them, but I'll be back. Savage. You're listening to the Savage Nation. I welcome you far and wide, unless you're homophobic. If you're homophobic, I suggest you not listen to this program, because homophobia is a very serious problem in the world of allopathy. Here's an American song called Kansas City. Let me hear it already. I'm really depressed and bored. Do this the rest of my life. Shuffle off the mortal coil already. No, really, it starts to take on new meaning. I mean, we're just afraid of what's on the other side, that's all. That keeps us going. Yeah. Nothing's fun anymore. Everything's a dirge. You see Obama dismantling America. And getting away with it. Just getting away with it. People don't understand how dangerous this character is. And he laughs in their face and says, you voted for me, you all voted for me. Frustration is the idiocy in the media.
Ah, oh, but you know, yeah, mustache.
Anyway, forget it. Turn it off. It's real American music. Beautiful guitar. No one could do that anymore. Garage bands, marijuana. Look what it's produced. Firewater and 22 rifles that killed varmints. That's what produced that kind of guitar playing. Just drinking hard booze and shooting varmints. In the backyard, that's the kind of music resulted. Today, it's all weak, weepy, elevator music. You know, this morning I saw something that really bothered me, and I contemplated whether to get into this or not, because then I got to eat my heart out with this, because so many of you are going to disagree with me. But I'll do it anyway. I'm that kind of guy. Pope goes to Israel. He pays tribute to the memory of 6 million Jews who perished in the Holocaust. He pledges to work tirelessly to prevent such hatred from recurring in the hearts of mankind again, and he's attacked by Israelis because he didn't apologize for the Holocaust. I got ballistically angry at the Israelis for doing this. Here is an example of Israelis who are committing suicide day by day, taking their nation apart. Listen to this schmuck, Knesset Speaker Reuven Rivlin, saying, we're talking about the Pope, who is also a representative of the Holy See, who has a lot to ask forgiveness from our people for. No, you're wrong, Reuven. He didn't commit the Holocaust. The German people today didn't commit the Holocaust. Stop demanding that the whole world apologize to you already. But they didn't like that the Pope went there. He gives a speech, but he didn't apologize on behalf of the Catholic Church. And I agree the Pope did a great job, and I think that the Israelis made a huge error here. First of all, I happen to have studied this issue very carefully. Pope Pius XII, who was alive during the Hitler era, did as much as any living man could do, in my opinion, to rescue Jews and other unfortunate victims of Hitler without himself getting killed. Eugenio Pacelli, and I can prove what I'm saying to a certain extent insofar as you could prove anything in history. Let me give you some proofs, okay? Pope Pius XII, who saved hundreds of thousands of Jewish people from the death camps with the help of nuns and priests, many of whom, by the way, were killed themselves, Eugenio Pacelli, Pope Pius XII. Do you know that after World War II, a forest, when Israel was created in the early 1950s, a forest was named for Pius XII after the war? That's how much the actual survivors thought of Pacelli. Never mind these grifters now in Israel trying to milk people for money with this constant apologize, apologize, you did it, you owe me. No, the actual survivors of the Holocaust was so in love with Pacelli, Pope Pius XII, that they named the forest for him. But I will give you another proof as to why I take this stand. Let's see if I can recall this. I'm a little tired right now from the last 10 days that I've been through. But after World War II, the chief rabbi of Rome, converted to Catholicism because of what the Catholic Church had done to save Jews during World War II. Now, you don't read about any of this, do you? You don't hear about any of this. The revisionist history is running in so many different directions that it takes a wise elder like Michael Savage to sort through all of the actual data and give you the actual truth. Of course I'm going to be roundly criticized for virtually anything I say. But, you know, I finally come to understand something. I've been trying to sort through this, these attacks I'm getting now, and I realize something. Do you think that the ancient Israelites who gave us the Word of God were loved by the people for bringing down the Word of God? Do you think Jeremiah and Job, and in no way am I comparing myself with them, but I would say that there's a scintilla of that spark within me. Let's put it to you that way. What I do doesn't come from the atmosphere. It comes from somewhere. And I would say that a bit of my genetic strands must run back to Jeremiah, to Job, and some of the other prophets of the ancient, of the Old Testament. That's it. Take it for what it is. I don't have any proof to that effect, nor do I expect you to believe me. But I'm stating the case as I see fit. So, as I say, do you think Jeremiah was loved by his people for putting down the edicts that God had told him to give in his prophecies? Do you think that Job in his Lamentations was a man who would have gone on Oprah Winfrey in his time? Hey, come see Job in his Lamentations about the way we're behaving here, worshiping the gold idol and making it with a dog. Okay? Come see Job make a fool of himself. He's going to be on Oprah Winfrey in the old... No, they didn't like him. So I realized that if I'm in the tradition of the ancients, which I believe I am, just take a look at my body of work. I don't need your approval. I'd like it, but I don't need it. My body of work speaks for itself. Most of the dreck who attack me on the internet have never produced anything on earth, and they will not be remembered for anything. They are mere bloggers. They write a little column, and that's the extent of their life. I have a vast body of work that I have created, and the books speak for themselves. The work I've done in the rainforest speak for themselves. And so I say to you, ladies and gentlemen, I am right.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. I don't like that song. It's about heartbreak. I don't need more heartbreak. Heartbreak. Forget it. I don't even want to go into it. And no one calls about the Pope now. I brought that up. It's a bigger story. And I don't know. You just want to talk about Teddy Singh's Rule Britannia. It's a big story, what happened to me and what's going on. It's the biggest story in England right now. It's a funny thing. You know, funny thing happened to me on the way to the theater, so to speak. Right now in England, I'm the talk of the town. This is the biggest thing because there is an election coming up. And as a result, they're talking about what the Labour government has done to Michael Savage in England. How is it that although I'm a campaign issue in England, here in my own country, Fox News refuses to cover it. Every other media outlet has dropped the story like it never happened. This is a major story. They haven't removed my name from that list of murderers. It's a major story. You know, the Dreyfus affair, for those of you who know history, occurred exactly in this manner. It started with an accusation. Now you say, well, when they came for him, who cares? He's a talk show host and a right winger, and I don't agree with him. You could be next. If you let a government do that to me, you could be next. But okay, I know many of my listeners support me. I understand that. But it's shocking to me how the American media, especially now, the putative conservative outlets have ignored me in this time of our need. I mean, I'll get along without them, but in this time of our need, when they have bamboozled you into, they're coming at you with what they call it? Well, I don't even know the name of the bill they're afraid of. Whatever. Come on, Beowulf. Fairness doctrine. Fairness doctrine, Schmanus doctrine. Here a country bans a conservative talk show host, Michael Savage, a nation, a whole nation says you can't come in. And worse than that, they put me on a list with actual murderers, real murderers, and not one peep from Fox News Network. Because Mr. Cornbeef rules it with an iron cabbage. It's as simple as that. He rules it with an iron cabbage. And you should, that's all you need to know about it. I got to clear the air. When Rush got caught up in the OxyContin scandal, I defended him on this show, by the way. Never heard a word from that fraud. I defended that blubbermouth. When O'Reilly got caught up in the Lufa sex scandal, I went on the air and I defended him. When people alleged that Wallbanger Hannity was using SlimFast to slim down his thighs so he could still slip into a pair of jeans, I said a man has a right to any dietary inclinations that he prefers. But not one word from them. And they get up there every day. They're starting to look more and more to me like Hey Abbott. They look like Lou Costello to me. They're not my friend. I don't think they're the friend of freedom. I really don't. I'm sorry. Georgia, Don, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I just wanted to say, Doctor, that when I first heard about what had been done to you over there, after I did my research, found what I was looking for, I said, well, I can't wait to see how Fox News covers this. I was excited. I wanted a war here. And then they've done what they've done, which is nothing. O'Reilly had that Goldberg guy on. And one thing I've noticed, everybody that wants to talk about it does talk about you. They always preface it with, I don't agree with everything he says, but... And to me, when they say that, they really do agree with you, but they know that they can't say it. And
I don't expect everyone to agree with me. I mean, positions are somewhat malleable, and the fact is people have differing of opinions or different shades of the same opinion. I'm not looking for them to say they agree with my opinion. This is a major league story in the press, in the media. If not this story, what then? Tell me what's a bigger story about freedom of speech in America right now. There is none. There's no bigger story. Sure, they talk about that lovely girl, Miss Prejean. That's a big story. When a sewer rat who writes a blog suddenly gets more attention than she does, and they give the sewer rat more time on Fox News than they give me, that tells you all you need to know about who's running Fox News. Thanks, Nicole. Virginia Beach, Deborah, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, you know what? When this first hit, I agree with you totally. I do believe you are anointed, appointed, and blessed to deliver this message. And by the way, I was listening to Bill Cunningham Sunday night, and he did mention your name and supported you.
Good for him. I'm glad. Now, he's a local host, I guess.
I'm sorry?
Whatever. I'm glad of that. I don't know about appointed and anointed. That has religious connotations that I can't comment on, but I certainly appreciate your sentiments. Let's put it to you that way. Let's go to Houston, Texas. Michael, what are you calling about? Go ahead, please.
Mr. Savage, I'm an 18-year-old high school student who couldn't possibly understand the magnitude of what's happened to you. Just wondering, how have these past 10 days affected you professionally and physically?
Wow. Thanks for asking. More than my family asked me, except for my most immediate relatives, meaning my wife and my son. But how has it affected me? Probably the biggest body blow I've had in my life. I'm getting up 2 o'clock in the morning saying it can't be happening here. Getting up and saying it can't be happening in England. Getting up and saying this is how the Holocaust began. Getting up and saying this is how the Dreyfus affair began. Getting up and saying there's nobody here behind you. You had to go hire your own lawyer in England. It's having a pretty heavy effect on me, Michael.
Well, at least you're still getting up, Dr. Savage, and it's an incredible honor to speak to you.
No, you're a great young guy. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. But, yeah, I mean, at least I'm getting up. I mean, I have a choice here. I can roll over, I can give up, I can leave radio, or I can keep fighting. And I think I know what I'm going to do. I mean, I have no choice at this point. I'm too deep into this battle to pull out of it. It's as simple as that. Do I sometimes not want to continue? Yeah. Do I sometimes say I wish it would all go away? Yes. It's like a disease. It's like getting diagnosed with an illness. But in this case, the illness is an illness that has affected the British body politic, not me. They are suffering from cancer of the spirit. If they don't understand what this is doing to freedoms around the world. And so they are suffering the cancer, not I. Nevertheless, you wake up sometimes and you say, you know, I've always loved the British people. I don't mean the individuals. I don't know the individuals. But what England, what Britain stood for, the Magna Carta. And then you wake up one day and you realize the land of the Magna Carta is being run by many potheads. Such low-life dirtbags like Gordon Brown and this Jackie Smith. These are cheap pieces of work. And you look at the land of Winston Churchill. You look at the land of some of the greatest literature the world has ever seen. And you take a look at the ruling class in that country. And you just come away saying, I'm astonished that the people could elect them. Then I come back to America. And then I look at Obama. I look at his minions. And I say, we're not too far behind. We are not too far behind right here. Has my own government said, although we detest what Michael Savage says, we are going to defend him and we're going to make sure that his name is removed from that list? Has my government defended me? There was a time when a U.S. government would have defended their citizens. I'm a dissident. I'm a dissenter. I'm a member of the loyal opposition, whether you know it or not. It is said that Rush Limbaugh has become the de facto voice of the Republican Party. That may or may not be true, and I think it is, because he certainly has been a mouthpiece for the Republican Party ever since he began, for better or for worse. I have never been a mouthpiece for the Republican Party. I have always been a registered independent, at least as far as I can remember, and I've always taken issue with Republicans when I saw they were veering too far left, which has like been forever, ever since Barry Goldwater, the party, moved to the left. And I am therefore, in some ways, the leader of the independent movement in the United States of America, if there is such a movement. So the burden falls upon me. The independent conservative movement, 20, 30 million people, they vote, by the way. And strangely enough, they didn't vote. Most of them didn't vote for McCain. They looked right through that man, and they saw his daughter. They looked through McCain, and they saw his daughter, and they didn't like what they heard. They remembered McCain, Kennedy. They remembered McCain, Feingold. They remember all of the McCain travesties. They knew that he was fundamentally all inspector who had been shot down in Vietnam and suffered terribly at the hands of the Vietnamese sadists. And so they had sympathy for him. Who could not, you know, love the man for what he had suffered through and survived? I know I did. Always looked up to his war record. You say, well, what did he really do? All right, you know what? He did a great deal. He survived the most horrible times imaginable. And for that alone, I respected him. But his politics were that of a Democrat of 20 years ago, if that. Actually, what I've said before, now pay attention, hemorrhoid with ears, get out your little recorder again, because you didn't put this on your show yet. All your graphs and charts come right from my show. But here we go, Hem. Hemi, are you ready? Here we go. John F. Kennedy, by today's standards, would be a right-wing conservative. Look at his policies. If John F. Kennedy were alive today and his politics were as they were then, he'd be considered a right-winger. The Democrat Party would have nothing to do with him. The Republicans wouldn't even run him for office. Take that down, Hem. Take that down, Hem. So there's no England anymore. What am I going to do about it? What am I going to do about it? I really would rather talk about the Pope. And, you know, you don't want to talk about it. I can't make you talk about what you don't want to talk about. Savage has become a campaign issue in England. How come Savage has been dropped by the American media? Well, you can understand that from MSLGBT. They have decided that they need to become a mouthpiece for the Obama administration because Mr. Smelt, who runs General Electric, which owns NBC, has received allegedly over $1 trillion in contracts around the world from the Obama administration for his corporation in exchange for, the best I can see it, becoming a mouthpiece for this administration. That's why NBC and MSNBC are bending over backwards to advance the Obama image, because the owner, the CEO, excuse me, of the parent company has done a deal behind closed doors, whereas if you give us these contracts, we'll be supportive of you, Mr. Obama, because you're such a great man. That's how I see it, okay? It's one man's opinion. But Savage has become a campaign issue in England. And the fact of the matter is, here I am. The government decision to ban me from England or from the whole UK. I don't even think I can go to Scotland if I wanted. If I wanted to go to Scotland, for example, for lox. What if I went on a lox tasting tour of the world? And on this lox, tasting tour. Let's say I'd start in New York, the lox capital of America. That smoked salmon to those. And then I go to Israel. I don't know if they even have it over there. And then on the way back, I want to stop in Scotland to taste their lox. Would I be allowed in? But in England, Boris Johnson, the Conservative candidate, has used this incident as a rallying cry for his own party. And Gordon Brown, the jerk who was the Communist Labour Party putative head, has been forced to apologize before Parliament, not for what was done to me, but for the scandals that are surrounding him. That includes expense accounts from Labour members of Parliament, including dog food, horse manure, and X-rated movies. See, they're very cheap. I keep repeating that. One thing I've noticed is liberals are cheap. In all of my experiences in my life, and I've known some liberals, they're the cheapest people on the planet. They don't leave tips in restaurants, and if they do, they're usually very low tips. There's a fake poet in San Francisco. His name rhymes with spaghetti. A fraud through and through, owns a ton of property, and acts like he's a downtrodden communist. Everyone who knows him knows he's a rat. He threw an Asian out when he took over the bookstore. He threw an Asian in the gutter. And I know I knew the guy well 30 years ago, 20 years ago. If I would go to a restaurant in North Beach for dinner with a group of people, let's say 8, 10 people in a cheap Italian restaurant, cheap ones in those days, like a, what do they call them, family style. Now, liberals love family style meals for three reasons. One, they can eat more of the soup and the tureen. B, they can sweep 3/4 of the plate of ravioli into their plate and say, here, have some ravioli after they've taken 3/4 of it. And of course, 4, they can leave as little of a tip as possible without you knowing it. This bum, whose name rhymes with spaghetti, would always run out on the tip. Oh, but he's a big man of the people. You look in the windows of his rotten, stinking, failing bookstore, and all you see is hate for America. I'll be right back.
I ran all the way.
Home by the Cleftones, Real American Song, on a Real American talk show, not aimed for the foreign audience. Now, I don't mean to drag the Cleftones into this international scandal. I don't know if any of the music I play will be analyzed by the Home Office, see if it's subversive in some way. Hey, by the way, did you hear what came out? All right, to knock it off already. Did you hear what came out? Remember the story in Boston of the texting trolley driver who crashed into another train while text messaging his girlfriend? You ready for the rest of the story? He's a transgendered male, and he was hired as a minority because of his transgendered status and had 3 speeding tickets, this dirtbag. You hear the world you're living in? They were forced to hire this sick degenerate because he had surgery performed on himself. In other words, he's crazy in plain English. Crazy by any analysis. I've talked about this. You accept it. You accept it. I don't accept it. My religious teachings tell me that a man who goes to a doctor and says, I'm really a woman inside, cut my schmendrick off and turn me into a woman is insane. The guy should be put into a funhouse with soft walls and given deep therapy and Prozac and psychodrugs till he's better. Any doctor who performs it should be arrested. That's how I see it. That's also a crime. Well, you can then declare the Bible a hate book. Go ahead. Get to the ultimate, because you do anyway, you sickos, you. I am a product of my religious teaching, my family upbringing, my Boy Scout background, my education, and everything else I have done and read in my life. And that's it. I'm entitled to my opinion. I don't live in your world. I live in my world, and about 30 million Americans agree with me, if not more. Now, I'm telling you, so when I say to you the texting trolley driver is a transgendered male who never should have been behind the wheel of a trolley, but he was hired as a minority because of his transgendered status. How can you call that a status, by the way? That's a status? Being an Eagle Scout is a status. Being an ex-member of the Special Forces is a status. But having your private parts cut off is not a status. It's an example of a psychic injury. So that's the world. You see, I don't like a lot of what goes on in my world today. And I speak for tens of millions of others who are also sick to their stomach over the insanity in this country. They wake up one day and they see the degenerates in the ACLU have more power than the CIA, and they know the danger they're in. They see the twisted, pervert, anti-American vermin in the ACLU now have more power than the CIA. And they wonder, how did this happen? How could they be living in a nation where degenerates in the ACLU, who have always stood against America, who are working for the enemy's team, how could they have more power than the CIA? How did this come about? They ask themselves these questions every morning. So you wonder on two fronts, why is he so popular? Why? Because he speaks it like it is. He says it like it is. He speaks it in ways that people can understand him across the ethnic spectrum, the age spectrum, etc. People understand Michael Savage because I don't mince words. Okay, you want to mince words? What do you want to take me on and tell me why I'm wrong? I may or may not take your call. I'm not obligated to. If you don't like what I say and you can't get on the show because you don't have the capacity to debate properly, then go blog. See if I care. Go blog, okay? You got plenty of time until the evening's activities begin. 1-800-449-8255. I raised important stuff about the Pope. No one called. Oh, there's two. You know what I want to talk about in the next hour is the Pope. Not apologizing in the Middle East, and he shouldn't. The Israelis who are demanding his apology are idiots. They took an ally. You know, this is an example of a country that everything they do is wrong. What the heck is it with the Israelis? What were these liberals? He came over. He goes to the Yad Vashem Memorial, and he talks in sincere tones about the tragedy of the Holocaust. And he didn't apologize for the German people. He doesn't have to apologize. He wasn't there. He didn't do it. This is liberalism, the mental disorder, speaking from Israel. It's why Israel's hanging like a loose tooth, because there is no leadership over there. Just as we have no leadership here, and there's no leadership over there. The whole West is hanging like a loose tooth, because there are no men left to speak the truth. Those who do speak the truth are not being heard.
Savage.
Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We got your back. We're going to stand with you. We'll show them over there with their stiff upper lips. We'll show them a thing or two right here, right now.
If anybody knows who his PR is, perhaps they could put me in touch. Because if I could get banned from going to America, and I'm not planning to go to America, it'd be great, wouldn't it? I wouldn't agree with some of his views. But, hey, listen, he says he's got freedom to express them. Have we lost the plot in this country?
Teddy thinks that England has gone to the dogs. Bravo, Teddy. I think Teddy will now be banned in England. Oh, my wonderful production team. They do this for me. They know that I'm a little down right now. Oh, lordy, lordy. Here is the Savage Nation. Another big hour. 1-800-449-8255 from anywhere in the civilized world. I think you have to add an 011 from the uncivilized world. I got a letter from an email from a relative, and certainly I'm going to retain the privacy. But it's so well put It's two sentences or so long. Dear Michael Savage, I just wanted to share my shock and outrage over the British Home Secretary's inclusion of Michael on the dreadful list of people banned from the UK. Having recently visited the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., and seeing the horrific result of such shallow thinking, I can see the parallels and truly fear for our freedom. Please know I support you in the right to free speech. Love. Now, that's what I call an email. Now, that brings me to the Dreyfus affair. Because there are dreadful parallels between what is being done to me by these Lilliputians in England and the Dreyfus affair, which is a political scandal which divided France in the 1890s and the early 1900s. The Dreyfus affair involved the conviction for treason in November of 1894 of Captain Alfred Dreyfus, who was a French artillery officer of Alsatian Jewish descent. He was sentenced to life imprisonment because they said he had communicated French military secrets to the German embassy in Paris. Dreyfus was then sent to the penal colony of Devil's Island in French Guiana and placed in solitary confinement. Many of you saw the movie many years ago. It was actually a dreadful version with that ham actor who's never done anything good since Ratso Rizzo. 2 years later, in 1896, evidence came to light identifying a French army major named Ferdinand Walson Esterhazy. Screenwriter. As the real culprit. You hear this? However, see, Esterhazy was the real culprit. Esterhazy was the real treasonous one. But high-ranking French military officials suppressed this new evidence, and Esterhazy was unanimously acquitted after the second day of his trial in military court. Instead of being exonerated, Alfred Dreyfus was further accused on the basis of false documents fabricated by French counterintelligence officers seeking to reconfirm Dreyfus's conviction. Word of the military court's framing of Alfred Dreyfus and of an attendant cover-up began to spread through France, largely due, now pay attention, all of those of you in the media, to a vehement public protestation in a Paris newspaper by writer Émile Zola in January of 1898. Thus far, America does not have an Émile Zola. Thus far, we have very few Émile Zolas. The case was then reopened due to this pressure, and Alfred Dreyfus was brought back from Guiana in 1899 to be tried again. And the intense judicial and political scandal that ensued divided French society between those who supported Dreyfus and those who condemned Dreyfus, such as Edouard Drumont, the director and publisher of the anti-Semitic newspaper La Libre Parole, and etc. Eventually, though, all the accusations against Alfred Dreyfus were demonstrated to be baseless. Dreyfus was exonerated finally, reinstated as a major in the French army in 1906. He later served during the whole of World War I, ending his service with the rank of lieutenant colonel. Now, certainly, we are not yet at the point where I'm being sent to Devil's Island. That is not to say that there are not those in this government who would like to send me, would certainly love to send me to a Devil's Island, if they could. But thus far, I am still protected by the United States Constitution. But there are minor, if not major, similarities between this condemnation of Dreyfus and these false accusations against Michael Savage, meaning you can take my sound bites, 15 years of radio, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. Think of how many thousands of hours of broadcasts I have given. Don't you think that if I had actually ever incited violence or called for violence, I would have been thrown off radio stations in the beginning or along the way? But I never have. So, as I say, you can frame anybody with sound bites, which has been done to me by Media Matters, and that's a George Soros and Hillary Clinton created company, by the way. She even boasted about having created this group. I know where these sound bites came from in England. They came from Media Matters. That's my allegation. And when the court case, when this court case eventually comes around, we're going to prove through discovery. We're going to try to prove where these sound bites came from. And this could bring down this government. That's all I can say. I'm telling you right now, this is out of my hands. But if I don't get an apology from the British Home Office and my name is not removed from that list, and we go to trial, which could cost me $2 million, but I'm willing to spend it. When we go to trial, we will conduct discovery here in America. And if that email trail comes back up the chain to the Obama administration, this government will fall. And that's why those of you in the Obama administration who are listening right now, I heartily advise you to call your cohorts, Jackie Smith et al., and get my name off that list and put it behind you, because I'll drop it at that point. Otherwise, I warn you, I have a legal team in place that will pursue this with or without me until my name is cleared. So do it for the sake of your master, if for no one else. Certainly don't do it for me. But I heartily recommend you call Jackie, the X-rated Home Secretary, and take care of this right now. And that's all I have to say at this moment. So let's have a little I Ran All the Way Home. I'll kind of stretch. I'm going to lift weights now in the studio.
I ran all the way.
That's all. Was good when I was 15. Kill it. What else did they do? The Cleftones. They were from Jamaica High School, weren't they? Didn't they do something bigger than they ran all the way home? That's the one I love. Little Girl of Mine. That I love. Yeah, that was the good stuff. The Electric Blue Saddle Stitch Pants was written around this time. Now, that's a different universe. Jukebox America. What I think I'm going to do, play another stanza. Yeah, it's a page long. Stop right now. In my great opus, Psychological Nudity, Savage Radio Stories, which you can only buy, you can't buy it in bookstores yet. It's only available on michaelsavage.com. I've done very well with it. You know, I'm not buying a new anything with it, but it's done very well. I don't need bookstores. They need me. See, it's my kind of book that could keep bookstores alive, but they don't want my books. So they publish the same left-wing dreck that nobody buys. Just like the newspapers, going out of business. Why? Same left-wing dreck. No one reads it. So in my opus, Psychological Nudity, The Electric Blue Saddle-Stitched Pants, is the first story. I chose it as my lead story. And it's a page long, and I'm going to read it in a minute, but play the music again, just so they know what I'm setting the stage now. All right, now we're going to take you back to the seventh grade, and my mother buys me a new pair of incredible pants. We didn't have a lot of money, but she knew I wanted these pants really badly. It was the Elvis era, you see, and Mama Savage saved, and she bought me a pair of electric blue saddle stitch pants, and I wore them to school. I think it was the seventh grade, yeah, and I thought I was Elvis himself, you see. On the very first day, a bigger older kid just happened to be wearing the same electric blue saddle stitch pants, and naturally we got into a scuffle. He pushed me down, and my gorgeous Elvis pants were ripped in the knee. I thought it was the end of the world because these were the most expensive, beautiful pants I had ever had in my life. So the rest of the day, I couldn't sit through the classes. Whatever the teacher said, my mind was somewhere else. My heart was pounding. I was thinking, how am I going to tell my mother? How am I going to tell my mother about the ripped pants? So I came home with the pants, hiding the rip under my coat. I said, Ma, I ripped my pants. But she didn't get mad. She said, let me see them. Don't worry about that. I said, you're not going to tell Dad, are you? She said, no, don't worry about it. So all night long, I couldn't sleep. The next day, the women were talking it over, sitting around the little table in that little house in Queens, and they were moving the crumbs around with their bread knives on the oilcloth, tablecloth, and talking. They decided what to do. They took the pants to a certain tailor, and the word came back, don't worry, Michael, the pants can be weaved. Now, I didn't know what the pants can be weaved meant. I don't think they do that anymore because clothing has become something different than it was in my day. Today, we throw everything in the garbage the minute it's soiled. But I knew from that moment on that everything would be good, and it was. The pants were weaved. That's what a mother's for, I guess, to fix everything but a broken heart. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back. Savage.
Can't we be sweethearts? Why don't we fall in love right from the start? You're the girl I'm thinking of.
All right, that's a hit. Hashi, give him $50 a piece. Get him signed up. You kids want some dope? You want some pot? You want some boo? All right, kids, take a walk.
Please be my sweetheart. Don't you know the way I feel? Please play the part.
Guaranteed hit instantly. Imaginary con went on and how they stole it.
I really love
That's all the kids from Jamaica. I probably got $50 a piece for this song. Yeah, maybe I've watched too many Sopranos episodes. I'll admit it. I'll admit it. I mean, I told you I'm a product. Where's that thing I did yesterday? That great thing. I am Moses. I am Abraham. You have that recorded from yesterday? I am Moses. I am Abraham. I am Isaac. I am Charlemagne. I am John Wayne. I am Coltrane. They try to suppress me. Try to redress me. Called me incorrect. Deserving no respect. I am Hatton. I am Hatton. Even Mountbatten. I am Eisenhower. Not a wallflower. I am Washington. I am Pershing. I'm MacArthur. I'm Kipling. I'm Audie Murphy. And I'm Sky King. They'll steal your crown, trample you down, take your good name, and put it to shame. I am Jim
Autry. All
right,
it's enough. Yeah, all right. All of the intellectuals are saying it's not highbrow enough for them. If you don't play, you got to play Vivaldi music and talk sarcastically in a soft tone for them to think you're intelligent. Look how far it's gotten them. Take a look at their dental work over there. You know, highbrow, lowbrow, doesn't matter to me. As long as people understand what you're saying, it doesn't matter how you get the message across. I can go highbrow, I can go lowbrow, I can go corporatees, I can go New Yorkies, I can go Californiaese, I can go real easy, I can go real hard. It doesn't matter to me. Fact of the matter is what I say is what matters, not how I say it. And that's the point. See, this is something that they don't understand in some countries. They think that everything has to be done in polite talk. What they don't understand is that we're way past the age where politeness is going to save us. No, we don't need polite talk. We need some real angry talk to save this country. And it's time that we expressed ourselves angrily. When did anger become a crime? Is it written anywhere that anger is a crime? Now, I know that the left says anything that you say that they disagree with is hate. When it isn't hate, it's anger. There's a big difference between hate and anger. Don't let them don't let them redefine your emotions for you. Redefine their mental disorder. Liberalism is a mental disorder. But anger is not illegal. Neither is hate, by the way. In fact, the Bible says there's a time to love and a time to hate. But the fact of the matter is, I'm a student of Kipling as well. I love his poem, If. If you can be a man, blah, 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 but then you'll be a man, my son. Remember those stanzas, one after the other, how many years I've read it on this show? If you can be hated, not give in to hating, too. Remember that one? Then you will be a man, my son. So you don't have to go down to the level of the bloggers and the people on MSLGBT, the subsidized government television network, in order to make your points. You can do it in your own way. So that's it. Now we can talk about politics if you want. Chicago, Bob, go ahead. Please, topic, what is your topic?
My topic is your comments on the Pope of World War II. I saw the photo of him standing with Hitler. That's when he should have spoke out, but in pacifist fashion, they don't speak out then. And later
Bob, you know, you're talking in a vacuum. If Eugenio Pacelli was such a bad man, why did the following two things occur? One, the chief rabbi of Rome converted to Catholicism after the war in his honor for what the Catholic Church had done to save the Jews and other innocent victims during the Holocaust. And also, why was a forest named for Pacelli in Israel in the early 1950s if he was so evil?
I can give you a very good answer to what I'm trying to drive home here. If you speak up for the living when you're supposed to, you won't
Bob,
have to
Bob, excuse me, Bob, answer those two questions. Why would the Israelis who had survived the Holocaust have named a forest for Pope Pius XII in the early 50s if he was such an evil man?
Michael, I didn't say he was the evil man. I said, all I'm trying to say is this, is that if he should have spoke up about his suspicions about Hitler when he had the chance. In other words, what I'm saying...
But, Bob, you're talking in a vacuum. Do you have any idea what the consequences were to stand up to Hitler in those days?
People won't even stand up to Obama today, and you wanted him to stand up to Hitler.
Savage.
Heart and soul, I fell in love with you. Heart and soul, the way a fool would do, madly. Because
it is the Savage Nation. We've been talking about Pope Pius XII, Eugenio Pacelli. We are talking about those who don't like me because they're homophobes. We are talking about the Dreyfus Affair, the Savage Affair. Someone says to me that the song I Ran All the Way Home is by a group named the Impalas, not the Cleftones. I'm not sure about that. I'm not an expert on this. I don't know. Whatever. It's another universe. Times have moved on. Remember, those are the days when I first smelled pizza. Actually, I was younger when I first smelled pizza. It smelled like vomit to me. Was the mozzarella cheese stronger in those days, or was it my first impression? I currently don't eat dairy at all, no cheese. It's a shame because I love cheese. For 30 years, I didn't touch it. I was healthy as whatever. I was very. But then I started taking in cheese with the dog because he likes provolone cheese. My dog likes provolone. It's amazing. And he goes, jumps for joy over provolone, and I'd give him a slice, and I'd take a slice. I started lying to myself. I need the cheese for my bones. I'm getting older. I don't know how I came up with that cockamamie. My bones are as strong as you need. I don't know. I never had dairy for years. Like, I've always had a dairy allergy ever since my mother tried to force feed me milk. Hated it. Hated it. I hated milk. I used to barf just when she brought it out. I couldn't, whatever. But I knew as a PhD in nutrition what the dangers are for certain people now. Who do not have sufficient lactase to break down the lactose. They get illnesses and allergies. So I avoided it. Now I found about 2 years ago, I started to get very severe pains in my right foot and my left hand. I'm just complaining. It's not like an old man on a boardwalk in Atlantic City. But see, I'm trying to like explain myself to new listeners. Those who are listening for 15 years know that I go back and forth. Politics, family, medicine, nutrition, history, science, whatever is on my mind. Make believe we're in a cafe having a conversation. This is not a one-dimensional, two-dimensional show. Okay, I have a kaleidoscopic mind with kaleidoscopic interests, and they are reflected on this show. So if I move into something else, it's how my mind works, and which is part of my success, is that I'm not a two-dimensional kind of guy. So, you know, I'm a conversationalist from another time. Let's put it to you that way. In another age, this would have been known as a Renaissance man, whatever that meant. I have no idea. Even when I heard it, I reached for my. No, when I heard a man was a Renaissance man, I always made sure that the. You always had to watch your back when you heard that. It reminded me of the character in Holden Caulfield in A Catcher in the Rye, when the kid's feeling like broken and lonely and emotionally wrecked, and the teacher takes him in, and he wakes up with the teacher's hand on his thigh. You know what I mean? When I heard Renaissance Man, it reminded me of that particular scene. So I like dogs at this point. I'm reaching a point in my life where, Teddy, where are those questions? A reporter sent me questions. Wonderful lady reporter. Did I say something wrong again? Lady reporter. Now, that'll go down. May 12, 2009, he said, lady reporter, blah, blah, blah. We know that there's no gender when it comes to reporting, blah, 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 blah. Get on the internet, blah, 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 blah. Lady reporter, blah, 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 sexist implication, blah, 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 blah. Schmucks and nothing to do. Where is this? I don't have the questions I'm supposed to ask today. Where is this? Here they are. The woman sent me these questions. This lady reporter. What's wrong with the lady reporter? I can't find it. Here they are. Remember the media show, Anna Nameless, is interviewing me and asking me the following questions. What do you think my answers will be? I haven't answered it yet. I couldn't. They were so complicated. Dr. Savage, she said, you give so much of yourself on the air. What inspires you to be generous? Oh, it was question two. What sustains you? Faith, passion, Teddy. What sustains you through it all? And I thought now it's probably the dog. I know I'm supposed to say the Bible. No. The number one thing is the dog at this point. The dog and spaghetti. Truthfully, I think the two together because I call him Spaghetti Teddy. But I was thinking about the dog last night. He gives me such pleasure. I hope he's not banned in England. I hope he's not. What if he loses his citizenship in America? What if Obama gets jealous and he says he's upstaging his dog, the water dog that they got? They're always like fake dogs in the White House. They get rid of them.
You know, most politicians, I think they let him run on the highway after their 4 years or 8 years are up. You think that Bush really plays with Bonnie now? Are you kidding me? Yeah, the last I saw Bonnie, I think Bonnie was running on a highway in Texas. They get him around there for a few months. Oh, we need a dog for the White House. But I'm an actual dog lover. So Teddy gave me so much pleasure yesterday as a little creature. I wonder, how could anything that small have so much personality? I don't understand it, I said to myself. I said, what, only we humans have a personality? A bird has personality. So I saw the dog, and I don't like people anymore at all. I can't be around anyone, like withdrawing. I'm sorry to break it to you. I thought about, what if I became one of these nuts who have like 12, 13, 15 dogs in the house, and each one has a name? Teddy, Eddie, Spaghetti, Schmaghetti, Joey, and Billy, and they run around, and then you become nuts altogether. Those houses are a wreck. They start, you know, they make in the house and no one cleans. Ugh, forget it. Then they have to call the AS, take the guy away, usually weighs 700 pounds. They need a crane to remove him from his bed. Then he goes on Oprah Winfrey and he's invited to the White House as an example of a disabled person who should get a job. Text. So the question was, what sustains me? Faith, passion, Teddy. Through it all. Teddy's one of the things. It's not the only thing. You know what sustains me? I don't even know what sustains me. I'll tell you. No, I'm going to answer it now. I'm going to give you a real answer. Many years ago, there was a young man who had grown up in the slums, who had decided he wanted to be a college professor. And this young man worked three jobs. He wrote 20 books to get his PhD from a great university, because all of his liberal college professors said the PhD is a union card, and once you get the union card, you will be granted your professorship. And this young man, who had two children at the time, was denied 200 jobs, not because he didn't have an A average out of the university in his PhD, not because his PhD wasn't publishable because it became a book, it was so brilliant, but because he was a white male in an age when they were not hiring white males in the universities. Instead of the white male in the university, they needed diversity in the university, which is why we have such superb coursework and such going on in the universities today. And so the young man was kind of really beaten up by society because of the social engineering of the left. And things went from bad to worse. Two young children, how am I going to support them? A lot of worry. And then one day, in the darkest of moments, this young man went out on his deck in the middle of a forested area where he lived, and he prayed to God to give him a living. Said to God, God, why hast thou forsaken me? He said, God, I've tried so hard. I've done everything right. God, why hast thou forsaken me? Please, God, give me a living. I did not ask for fortune. I did not ask for fame. He asked only for a living. And lo and behold, through fate, he was given a living. Not in the way he thought it would come, nor did it come as a lottery win. He didn't win a lottery where he could just go off into the sunset. It came with a price. The price tag is to give your heart and soul every day, 3 hours a day, and you'll make a great living. And everything you've dreamed of will come to you. But you have to work every day. That's the relationship. And so how did that happen? Because in order to get there, he had to be thrown into the cauldron. And in order to come out of the cauldron, now case hardened, a different man, he had to put aside an awful lot of things. He had to learn that all things in the world were almost meaningless except one thing, which was survival itself. He learned to put aside all of the liberal claptrap he had been taught in university about follow what and you enjoy and you will. Remember those days? Follow what you enjoy and the living will follow. Oh, it's so outrageous that we have turned our universities into mere trade schools, they used to say. They're meant for expanding the mind, opening you up to the literature and the poetry. Well, I'm all for it as an avocation. But you can't get a job except in Starbucks, all you literate people. You know, that's all that's waiting for you. And you can't even make change properly. Nor can you make a good double latte with soy milk, by the way. So he learned to put aside all of that. And he learned that only one thing mattered. And that was called survival. That's all. So in that time, he learned to survive. He learned how to survive. He learned what that meant. He learned that he had to drop friends who were not his friends. He learned he had to drop friends who were really his enemies. And he learned that he had to look at the enemies who now became his friends in a different light. And he learned that books that he had once read were of no value whatsoever. All of the stuff that was between these book covers were written by people who basically couldn't make a living. They were malcontents. That's why they wrote books, he figured out. And then he decided how to make a living, and he made a living. So what I'm getting at is survival is a series of techniques. And I'm using the same survival techniques right now. That's what keeps me going. In other words, there's nothing mystical about it. There's nothing mystical at all. I get up every morning, and I got to get up and go on the air, and I get up and go on the air. I, you know, prepare for it. I read. I bring in whatever, and bing. And I hired the lawyers, and that's the end of it. Why do I do it? I do it. That's the answer. I have no reason why I do it. I do it because I do it. Okay? I speak, therefore I am. I'm Michael Savage. I'll be right back. Savage.
Enter our profession are there to serve the public interest and not to serve themselves. And so I want to apologize on behalf of politicians, on behalf of all parties, for what has happened in the events of these last few days.
Yep, Britain has gone to the dogs under this Gordon Brown. Teddy, that's enough now. You're going to be banned in Britain if you keep this up. You're going to ban. All right, that's enough. So the space shuttle, huh? Parts fell off it again. It's sad. I mean, we once were the greatest country on Earth. It's like an old Buick Roadmaster, this space shuttle. It's like a 58 Roadmaster with fenders falling off it. Let the Germans build a damn thing already. Let the Japanese build one. Even the Kia company could build one where the parts wouldn't fall off. Who built this thing? Bush's cronies. Who do you think built it? Space shuttle. You ever hear of a thing like that? Every time it goes up, things fly off the damn thing. Oh, what's happened to my country? It's a metaphor for the whole country. Pieces falling off a space shuttle. I'm in favor, generally, of space exploration. But not when you have a shuttle with it, where the fenders fall. The equivalent of the fenders fall off the thing. All right, did you write that down, Hem? The big Hem got it. You had your wife write it down? She recorded it for you? You fell asleep in a stupor? It'll be tomorrow on Fox News. Hem will write it. That'll be Hem's joke tomorrow. That's all. Why do I care? He lies. That article's coming out soon. Remember I gave the guy the interview for the major magazine? I can't disclose it till it's out. They sent me like 40 questions over the weekend. I worked and my eyes are killing me. At least they do fact-checking. Remember the guy who came out? I read his emails for 6 weeks on the show. Should I do it? Shouldn't I do it? Major league reporter. Nice guy. I'm sure he's going to paint me in a negative way, but okay, what can I do about it? I felt he was going to do it anyway, and once he'd meet me, it would be less damaging because I'm actually a decent person, and I'm not afraid of showing myself to the people. You know, they know who I am once they meet me. They can read through me, and they could see that I'm a decent person. So the point is, he comes out, does the article. We drank a lot of beer. We went to Chinese food. I liked the guy, truthfully. And as I said to you at the end, he's African-English, Afro-English, whatever the combo is. Father's an African, and his mother's a English woman, and they're both professors. Comes from a great family. Very intelligent young guy. Sure, he's a liberal. So what? Not every liberal is going to paint the negative portrait. Not every conservative is capable of painting a positive portrait of me either. So whatever. What I'm saying is the guy comes out. So over the weekend, I get 40 facts to be checked from his assistant. And I went through them, this and that, blah, 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 blah. Now the article's going to come out very shortly. And when it comes out, it's going to be next shockwave. I can guarantee you. It doesn't end. But then I said, look, this is the business I chose. I mean, you're going to shrink like a violet all of a sudden. You're in the public eye. You have written whatever number of books, 25, I can't count. You've done broadcasts for 15 years. You are a polarizing figure. You are a controversial radio broadcaster. You are now an international incident. So what do you expect? You're going to wake up in the morning and the world's going to love you? You say, how? You got to talk to yourself. My mother's not here. My father's not here. They've been gone a long time. But that's what it is. You got to learn to talk to yourself. You got to keep your own counsel, as they say. You're asking me how. How do you deal with it? How do you deal with all of these slings and arrows of outrageous fortune? Well, when those who hate you don't give in to hating, that's all. Try not to anyway. I mean, I'm an emotional guy, and I will react if people push me. But basically, I'd rather be left alone. At this point, I can't be left alone. What is the truth about you on the global landscape? What is your real mission for your listeners and for America? Do you have sage advice for living a reasonable, fearless life? No. Guys can write books on that. All the phonies. If you actually look into those guys, you know, a purposeful, driven life. If you could actually get an x-ray, I guarantee you that go, oh, you don't want to know. All these gurus, these guys with bad suits, man. Sage advice for living a reasonable, fearless life. Guys give lectures on this. I don't understand who goes to these things. Who pays a guy $300 to tell him how to live a life? What kind of schmuck sits in an audience and listens to a guy tell him how to live a life? Who would go listen to a guy like that? Me, on the other hand, you'd come to because you know I'll tell you the truth. I don't do lectures. People think I do. I do this for attention. I don't. The leprechaun needs it because I don't know. I don't know how these guys, what I don't know the limits of an ego like this. How much do they need? Every Friday he's off and a flying somewhere and gives a speech for 45 minutes for 75 grand and flies back. Hey. And another one gives a speech on Slim Fast will help you get into the jeans you wore 5 years ago. All right, they go for that kind of thing. I have no advice to give you. All of my advice is on the show and in my books. Let's see the next question. Michael Savage, who or what makes you smile, lends distraction in this troubled universe, she writes. Personally, I like spaghetti, pine trees, and glacial lakes. You know, I like those three things, too. It's a shame I'm married. I like spaghetti, pine tree. That's like a Facebook thing, isn't it? Like, I like spaghetti, pine trees, and glacial lakes. People probably got married with less in common. Oh, my God. That's an interesting combo, spaghetti, pine trees, and glacial lakes. You could probably work a whole deal out with that. Go up to a glacial lake in the summer where it's still frozen with this, like, pine sap coming out and, like, boil water and make spaghetti up something and work a thing out there with a blanket. Michael, what do you think you'll be doing in 5 years? Oh, you know, there's a Spanish saying, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. Okay, does that answer your question? One of my favorite movies over and over again now is A Touch of Evil, the Orson Welles movie. I love that movie. I love that thing with the fortune teller. Who plays the fortune teller? Marlene Dietrich. I never liked her. She wasn't the type I went for. I don't understand what she was so hot. Hemingway said he, you know, what was so hot about Marlene Dietrich? The girls from that age, there was something wrong. I mean, with the whole, oh, well, it's a different time. They look different. You know who was the ugliest of those old showgirls? I don't understand men in that time. You look back on Betty Davis, Betty Grable. I never saw such ugly women in my life. All of World War II, there were men. You'd think men were dying in Normandy in order to come back and look at a Betty Grable pinup picture. I never understood it. The girl today, the most she could do is work for MSNBC, maybe on the weekend at 3 in the morning. Top. That's after a little cosmetic surgery. But what was the big deal about a lot of these women? They weren't like the sirens. Big deal. They had Dagmar. Big deal. So did my Cadillac. You know what I'm saying? That makes you, that races you. Play the clip now. I want to hear that.
What's my fortune? You've been reading the cards, haven't you?
I've been doing the accounts.
Come on, read my future for me.
You haven't got any.
Hmm? What do you mean?
Your future is all used up.
Oh, man.
Why don't you go home?
Why don't they make movies like this anymore that put chills up above my ears? Why? Did you hear Orson Welles, how his voice changed? And he goes, what? What do you mean? And his voice becomes like a little boy. Now, that's what you call acting. That's what you call directing himself. Oh, my God. That's what you call pasta when it was spaghetti. Remember my great poem, When Pasta Was Spaghetti? Play a little Tarantella music on the way out the door this hour. I think I've done enough for this hour because I got another big hour. I got to take a 6-minute break. And in that break, I'm not going to make spaghetti. I am not going to smell pine trees, and I'm not going to swim in a glacial lake. Hey, Paulie, pass the wine.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage becomes a campaign issue in England. That's me. You see, the scandal over my being banned in Britain seems to have tipped the political scales in favor of the Conservative Party over there. People in England are reacting with outrage to Michael Savage being put on a list of terrorists, murderers, and imams who advocate the violent overthrow of the British government. Even liberals in England are able to understand this. Of course, liberals in America are not. They're attacking me because they're fascists. But to completely understand why this has such a dramatic effect on the British political system, you really must examine the recent history of politics in England. In the 1980s, British conservatives rallied around the figure of Margaret Thatcher and made her the Prime Minister. The Iron Lady of England won the Falklands War against Argentina and finally began to slow the advance of leftism that had consumed England since the end of World War II. But after Thatcher left office, the glib Tony Blair and his Labour Party rose to power, depicting himself as a moderate. He became Prime Minister and soon proved, along with his transatlantic buddy Bill Clinton, that he was in the same left-wing mold, in fact some would say socialist-communist mold, as his predecessors. By the time Blair left office 2 years ago and turned power over to Gordon Brown, England had already started to grow sick of its latest leftist leaders. Very quickly, Gordon Brown, Jackie Smith, who Brown had appointed as Home Secretary, and the rest of the Labour Party became burdened with one scandal after another. Smith admitted in 07 that she had broken the law by smoking pot. Expense accounts from Labour members of Parliament began to include dog food, horse manure, and a bill for X-rated movies that Jackie's husband had watched. In the most recent election, the Conservative Party made huge gains. The leftist mayor of London, Red Ken Livingstone, was thrown out, and Conservative Boris Johnson rushed in. And now the government decision to ban me from the country seems to be the straw that broke the camel's Labour's back. Boris Johnson has used the incident as a rallying cry for his own party. Gordon Brown has been forced to apologize before Parliament, and it is widely believed that he will give Jackie Smith the boot. So don't believe for 1 minute that Michael Savage doesn't have an impact, not only on politics in the United States, but on politics around the world. The Savage Nation can change Britain, the Savage Nation can transform America, and the Savage Nation can make the world a safer place for men and women of conscience and liberty. Teddy the Poodle, barking to rule Britannia. Play the clip. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. I'm exhausted from it, but I love it. Let's listen to clip two from England.
I'm just slightly puzzled that our democracy is so fragile that we can't survive.
You've forgotten something. You have forgotten that at this particular moment there's something going on called an investigation into MPs' expenses, haven't you? You've forgotten all about that.
We haven't forgotten that.
You've forgotten all about that, and then suddenly this pops up and, oh, well, we'll ban him.
See, they're saying him, but they don't say Michael Savage. Now, let's go to three and hear the next one.
I think it's completely wrong. I mean, my view is quite straightforward. We've got a lot of laws about racial hatred and all the rest of it now.
Exactly, an incitement to violence.
Absolutely. If somebody breaches the law, you have them up. If they don't, you let them in. I think it's absurd to produce this kind of second list, the kind of McCarthy list of unacceptable opinions.
Well, it isn't kind of McCarthy.
I don't like that at all.
It seems like his name's been plucked out of a hat.
You know, these are the English that I grew up admiring. Who are these wonderful people? Shirley Williams, love you. And then there's this man, Andrew Neil, love you. Who are these folks? They're wonderful. They got it exactly right. This is the England I grew up admiring. It gets better in four.
But he doesn't want to come over here. He never even applied to come over here.
The assumption by our Home Secretary is that he was planning to come.
She must be psychic.
Some of the videos that the Home Secretary's husband has been watching should be banned before we ban disc jockeys.
They're supposed to be banned in some cases.
Oh, that's very funny. Maybe she's psychic from her husband's videos. See, now we're getting arch. We're getting back to the real intellect that we grew up to admire about. I mean, those of us who are Anglophiles, and I've been an Anglophile, I must admit. Now let's go to 05.
I mean, is it a cover? Here's the cynical response, that she's in the process of banning a number of what the tabloids call preachers of hate.
Mm. Yes.
And they're mainly Islamic.
They are.
So to balance it, you ban some right-wing shock jock from America.
I think there's a good deal in that.
Well, why do they always refer right-wing? Have you heard the media, anyone in the media use the word left-wing? Have you noticed this? Now, you, hemorrhoid with ears on Fox, pay attention. Pay attention now. I know you put the booze down, and I know your ears are cocked real sharply. Hemorrhoid with ears on Fox News, who copies everything I do, take this down, Junior. They use the word right-wing shock jock, right-wing this, right-wing politicians. Cheney's a right-winger. I'm a right-winger. Have you heard the word used recently, left-wing, with reference to Obama or any of his minions? Of course not. Now let's go to clip six.
Who, what was it? Voltaire? I always forget. You know, I may disagree with you, but I'll defend your right to say it.
Yes, that's correct.
Paraphrase him.
Well done. Isn't it was Voltaire.
Voltaire. Yeah. Wasn't that what my philosophy professor would be proud of me? Wasn't that what our democracy is based on?
Well, not really, is it? Because we have so many rules and regulations about what we can say, when we can say it, how we can say it, that we're so wound up with political correctness and fairness that what we actually do is, if anybody is likely, I'm amazed you're still on anyway, if anybody says anything that might actually upset
cruising
someone,
cruising here, isn't it?
someone, then they can't, because you might upset somebody.
You know, I'm thinking of moving to England now and getting a job in talk radio over there or talk television on BBC because it sounds so pleasant. It is just sounds wonderfully polite and pleasant. I would probably live an extra 2.3 years if I gave up talk radio in America because this is a brutal combat sport here. Those folks, they support each other. They have fun. It's delightful. I'm sure they go out for darts or whatever they do over there. I don't know if they still play darts in England, but I would imagine someone still must play darts in England. But I realized that because I once wrote a book in the early 80s on homeopathy that I'm banned in England. It could be because they are homeophobic. Joke. Look it up. Find out what homeopathy is and what allopathy is and get back to me, okay? Play some music.
Going to Kansas City. Kansas City, here I come.
You're listening to the Savage Nation. I welcome you far and wide, unless you're homeophobic. If you're homeophobic, I suggest you not listen to this program. Because homeophobia is a very serious problem in the world of allopathy. Here's an American song called Kansas City. Let me hear it already. I'm really depressed and bored. Do this the rest of my life. Shuffle off the mortar coil already. No, really, it starts to take on new meaning. I mean, we're just afraid of what's on the other side, that's all. That keeps us going. Yeah. Nothing's fun anymore. Everything's a dirge. You see Obama dismantling America. And getting away with it. Just getting away with it. People don't understand how dangerous this character is. And he laughs in their face and says, you voted for me, you all voted for me. Frustration is the idiocy in the media. This is Dr. Dissident Michael Savage back in a moment. The Obama administration has said that we should be focusing on Afghanistan, but hasn't really said anything about it since. Our next guest, KT McFarland from KTMcFarland.com, has just spent the last week in Afghanistan. She joins us now to tell us what she saw.
I went to Afghanistan and spent a week there with the U.S. Army and interviewing people from the Afghan government. I spent the majority of my time on the AFPAC border right next to the Tora Bora Mountains in the eastern part of Afghanistan, which is where a lot of the fiercest of the fighting has been and where the majority of the U.S. forces are. You know, the problem that I've concluded with the Afghanistan war is it really is difficult to envision any scenario where this ends well. And that's for a couple of reasons. First, there is no clarity of mission that I could see. And as an old military planner myself, I've got to tell you that what you really always want is a very clear mission of what you are trying to achieve, because that forces then the kind of troops you use, the kind of military equipment you have, and it allows you a benchmark to judge how successful you are. And with Afghanistan, there really has been no clarity of mission.
Well, did we start there with a clear mission?
Bush initially wanted to overthrow the Taliban government and wipe out al-Qaeda. But then, as with Iraq, he had mission creep. He then shifted the goal to make a democratic government in Afghanistan. Now, Obama has come in, having criticized the Iraq war, saying the Afghanistan war is the good war. And he's recently expanded the goal of the Afghanistan war to include Pakistan. But he's also narrowed the goal to one of defeating and destroying al-Qaeda. So unlike Bush, who wanted to build a democratic government, Obama's really talking about destroying al-Qaeda. Now, in addition to that, NATO, and this is primarily a NATO operation and not a U.S. operation, NATO's goal is to support the Afghan government to, quote, defeat insurgency, develop Afghanistan security forces, governance, and socioeconomic progress, and to create a secure environment. And then the Afghanistan government has yet another goal, which is to create democracy. So the thing is, each one of these things are different goals, and they would require different forces and a very different method of operation. I think that's why President Obama fired General McKiernan and put in place two new people in the American forces in Afghanistan, General McChrystal and Rodriguez, both of whom are experts at counterinsurgency. So maybe what he's trying to do is give more clarity to the mission as being one of just simply getting rid of al-Qaeda and doing it with a counterinsurgency force. But the other problem in Afghanistan is Pakistan. As Pakistan gets close to really imploding, and I think that their recent beat back of the forces, of the Taliban forces in Pakistan, is only a temporary thing. The Taliban is not going away. It's funded in large part by the drug trade in Afghanistan. And it's going to keep coming back. If we have a great policy and a great success in Afghanistan and we lose in Pakistan, then it doesn't really matter what happens in Afghanistan, because Pakistan is the bigger and greater and more powerful country. And if the Taliban and al-Qaeda and jihadists take over in Pakistan, you've got to assume that that's going to bleed back into Afghanistan.
What are the problems that you see in Afghanistan?
It's not clear who the enemy is. Is the enemy the Taliban? Now, there are two kinds of Taliban. There's the Afghan-Pakistan Taliban, and the Afghan-Pakistan. Then there are about four or five other groups that are operating in Afghanistan. They're not necessarily coordinated. They're certainly not part of one greater thing. They're, for the most part, regional groups fighting our forces. Well, are they all our enemy? Do all of them present a threat to the United States? I don't know. They may present a threat to Afghanistan, but that doesn't necessarily mean a threat to the United States. And the third thing that I found really upsetting, frankly, was this very large contractor presence in Afghanistan.
More contractors?
We have historically, when we go into other countries and have a military presence, we do local hires. It helps with the local economy. It fosters goodwill with the local governments. But in Afghanistan, what we've done is we've hired international contracting firms to come in. So they're getting rich on the Afghanistan war, but it's not clear the Afghans are. So as I drove through, for example, from Kabul and I went east towards the mountains, I saw these unbelievably grindingly poor villages. And yet you'd come up to a U.S. military base, and it was like Dorothy entering the city of Oz, where the military base is something out of the 21st century. It's efficient and it's modern and it's all brand new. And yet it's right next to fields growing grubby wheat fields that are and homes that are built largely out of mud. So the Afghans have to look at this and say, gee, what's in it for us? The United States, for example, has spent something like $31 billion in Afghanistan in the last 8 years. But not that much of it has gone to the Afghan government. It certainly hasn't created a large number of jobs for the Afghan people. So there's a growing resentment of the United States present, not a lessening of it. And then finally, this drug trade, the narco traffickers, the poppies that are grown, that the Taliban encourages the Afghans to grow because it then becomes the source of funding for the Taliban. I mean, somebody's paying for the Taliban, and they're getting the majority of their funding just through the drug trade. So what is our goal here? Is our goal to get rid of the poppy eradication, to deny the Taliban their funds? Is our goal to create the institutions of a civil society that in turn can foster democracy? Because the thing about Afghanistan, Michael, that I just was stunned with is this isn't Iraq. And Iraq had a well-educated population. It had civil society. It had urban areas. Afghanistan doesn't have any of those things. Afghanistan has tribes. Women's literacy, for example, is at about 6% nationally. Infant mortality, a quarter of all children don't even live to age 5. This is a country where we're not talking about nation building. We're talking about society building. And the bottom line of all that means a long-term commitment. Do we think that the American public is going to want to be there for another 20 years spending money at this rate to rebuild Afghanistan? And at what point do the economic woes of the United States and the Obama administration's maniacal spending plans, does somebody say, gee, why are we building a school in Nangarhar province, Afghanistan, when we're not building one in New Orleans? So to me, I don't see any good solution here. Maybe Obama, by putting a new group of people in, they're going to come up with some brilliant new policy to turn around the Afghan war. But from what I saw from the week that I was there and meeting countless people in the U.S. military, the Afghan government, the NGO world, it just does not look like a story with a happy ending. So I'm sorry to say all that, Michael, but I think it's worth facing it.
K.T. McFarland, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
The support I have been receiving since being banned in Britain has been growing and growing. Joining us now from the Washington Times is Jeffrey Kuhner with his views on this attack on Michael Savage.
Michael, the first thing I have to say to you is congratulations. You're a man after my own heart. I only wish I had the excuse of being banned from England so I could never go to that sorry excuse for a country. I have been there on several occasions, and Michael, I have to tell you, my friend, you really are not missing very much. The food is horrible. The people are nasty. The weather is just dismal. To me, England is the whole of Western civilization. It is the most wretched place on the continent of Europe and within the larger Western sphere of our civilization. It is, to me, really the dregs. And so for you to be banned in many ways gives you now a perfect excuse not to go there. But on a more serious level, Michael, I was very disturbed when I read the story first on the Drudge Report about the British government banning you. And here is why. It is clear that the ban is a fundamental assault on freedom of speech. It represents a fundamental decision now by the British government, especially the Home Secretary, Jackie Smith, to cave in and appease the growing forces of Islamic fascism and Islamic radicalism that are spreading across Europe and also growing within England itself. And what she has done by this decision is she has sullied, smeared, and disgraced your name. She has lumped you beside Russian gangsters, men who have been convicted for murdering 20 migrant workers. She has lumped you beside Hezbollah terrorists and known mass murderers. She has lumped you beside leaders of Hamas who openly advocate and champion the destruction of the Jews and the glories of strapping dynamite around your waist and blowing innocent women and children up. Now, what is it that you do, Michael? If you just stand back objectively, you go on the airwaves every day for 3 hours, adhering to the rule of law, to constitutional government. You espouse your views under freedom of speech and freedom of expression. You have never advocated violence once in your life. You have never once said that innocent civilians should be murdered or targeted. You have never even come close to that. You are a man who is peaceful and law-abiding. Look at the people on that list. They champion violent extremism and hatred. They champion the death and destruction of human beings. You champion the very opposite. You champion the cut and thrust of democratic debate, where people can express their views and express their ideas and let the best idea win. When your side, the conservative side, has lost elections, do you go like the leaders of Hamas and Hezbollah and say, kill, kill, kill? Do you stand there like those Russian fascists who shave their heads like a bunch of freaks and walk around the streets of Moscow looking to kill Georgians or looking to kill people from the Caucasus or Chechens or Ukrainians or Jews or whoever their targets are? This is an insult of the highest order. It is slanderous and it is defamatory. But Michael, it is more than that. And here, my friend, I have to say this to you. It is more than just about you. I know now you're in the crosshairs. I know what it's like. I've been in your shoes when you're at the center of the storm. I don't envy you. You have a big target on your back. People are now gunning for you. The left is after you. The British government is after you. Islamic extremists are after you. I know what it's like to be in that position and to be getting literally thousands of emails a day from people who say they want to kill you or who express nothing but hatred for your very existence. But this is something larger than Michael Savage. This is about the slow erosion of our liberties in the West. Because what Jackie Smith has done, Michael, is she has now surrendered not only to the forces of political correctness, but to the growing forces of Islamic thuggery and intimidation. Because London itself, I have been to London. You go to East London. It is a haven for Islamic clerics, radical Islamists who preach the glories and the virtues of jihad and of the need to impose Sharia law. Slowly, cities like Manchester and Liverpool and growing parts of London are becoming increasingly infiltrated by Islamist extremists. And so to buckle to their pressure, to buckle to the growing strength of the rising tide of Islam within British society and within Britain's shores, they have to throw them somebody. They have to throw them a sacrificial lamb so that they can say it's not only against you, it's against others as well. And that's why they've targeted you. This is an attempt to criminalize and delegitimize conservative speech, conservative ideas, and the conservative worldview. At its core, Michael, what this represents is the growing unholy alliance of the left with Islamic radicals. Because if you look at the left since the attacks on 9/11, what is it that they champion? They champion appeasement, that we give up the fight in Iraq, that we give up the fight in Afghanistan, that the threat of our time is not Islamic terrorism. It is not Islamic radicalism. It's global warming. That's the big challenge of our time. It's the inequalities of capitalism. That's the growing challenge of our time. It's the fact that we are a racist, sexist, imperialist country. That's the growing threat of our time. No, 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 no. It's not the butchers that glorify murdering women and children. It's not those animals in Afghanistan and Iraq that are killing our soldiers day after day after day. That's not the problem. It's not the men who slammed those planes into the World Trade Center, into the Twin Towers, and killed 3,000 people on that fateful day. That's not the problem. No. The temperature's gone up 1 degree around the world. That's the problem. It's climate change. And by saying this, what the left is effectively doing, Michael, is they are making a common cause with Islamic radicals. They are telling the West to unilaterally disarm. And this is the fundamental reason why that ban was passed and why you were put on that ban. Because of all the major radio talk show hosts, the man who has stood up unequivocally, principally, unashamedly, courageously against the gathering storm of Islamic fascism has been you. And that is why the Council of American Islamic Relations CARE has been gunning for you for years. And that is why the British Home Secretary put you on that blacklist, because they fear you, because you have the guts to say what many conservatives are now afraid to say. You will not go quietly into the good night. And so what they have to do now is they have to shame you. They have to marginalize you. They have to almost criminalize what you have to say, because they can't beat you in the forum of ideas. Because when you say that Iran is seeking to destroy the state of Israel off the face of the earth, wipe it off the face of the earth, you're right. When you say that Hamas has now taken hold of Gaza and that they plot the destruction and the murder of every Jew in the Middle East and eventually they want to attack the United States, you are right. When you say that Hezbollah has penetrated our southern border and that they are now looking to unleash heinous atrocities on American soil, you are right. When you say that we are not defending our porous southern border and this has left us exposed to every crazy jihadist in the world, you are right. When you say that the forces of political correctness have disarmed us against the growing strength of Islamic fascism, you are right. And most importantly, Michael, when you say, as many courageous conservatives in the 1930s, the lone voices led by people like Winston Churchill and others, when you face a fascist totalitarian enemy driven by fanatical hatred, driven by the deepest impulses of racism and imperialism, you cannot appease them. There can be no accommodation. It is a fight to the finish. And now is the time, not for America, not even for the people of the Western world, but for the people of the Muslim world to rise up and say, we will not allow jihad to be done in our name. Because when Osama bin Laden murders, when Hezbollah murders, when Hamas murders, when the Muslim Brotherhood preaches hate on the Arab street, when those Islamist clerics in East London talk about the glories of jihad and the need to impose Sharia law and to enslave women and hang homosexuals and murder Jews, they are doing it in the name of Islam. So it is up to the Muslim people to stand up and say, no, you are defaming our religion. What you are doing is a disgrace and a shame upon all Muslim people. But here is the dirty little secret. They are not speaking up. Just as in Nazi Germany, there were millions of moderate Germans. We know that. Just look at the elections in 32 and 33 when Hitler came to power, how many of them voted against the Nazi party. But they didn't speak out. They were silent. So the fact that there are all of these moderate Muslims means nothing unless they are willing to stand up and speak the courage of their convictions. But you, sir, Michael, and I say this proudly, you are the only man that has the guts to stand up to the butchers and the totalitarian lunatics that want to destroy our civilization. And this, sir, is your ultimate crime. And that's why you've been blacklisted. And that's why I stand with you 110%, and so do the people of America. God bless you, Michael.
Thanks, Jeff. Speaking out is important. We can't let them think for a second that we are okay with this attempt to roll over me. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Who is the real real Michael Savage? Well, the real Michael Savage was awarded the Freedom of Speech Award by Talkers Magazine in 2007. Savage graduated from Jamaica High School in Queens, New York, then attended Queens College in New York City, where he earned a Bachelor of Science degree in Biology and Education. After college, Savage taught high school science for several years in New York City and was a social worker before training as a scientist. Savage earned his doctorate from the University of California at Berkeley in epidemiology and nutritional ethnomedicine in 1978. Savage also earned two master's degrees, one in medical botany and one in medical anthropology from the University of Hawaii. Savage spent decades searching and saving tropical rainforests, especially their medicinal plants. Savage is the author of over 20 books, including Earth Medicine, Earth Foods, 1972, Plant a Tree, A Guide to Regreening America, 1975, Bugs in the Peanut Butter, 1976, Man's Useful Plants, 1976, The Taster's Guide to Beer, 1977, The Way of the Skeptical Nutritionist, 1981, The Art of Feeding Children Well, 1982, Nutrition Against Aging, 1983, Secrets of Fijian Medicine, 1983, Getting Off Cocaine, 1984, Maximum Immunity, 1986, Reducing the Risk of Alzheimer's, 1987, republished in 2007, The Complete Book of Homeopathy, 1989, The Herbal Bible, 1992, Healing Children Naturally, 1993, republished in 2007, Herbs That Heal, 1994, The Antioxidant Cookbook, 1995, The Savage Nation, 2002, The Enemy Within, 2003, Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, 2005, The Political Zoo, 2006, and Psychological Nudity, 2008. Wow. And I thought he was a bad guy. By what you read in the papers and what you hear on more snotty nonsense by LGBTs, whew. Savage created the phrase compassionate conservative in 1994, used by George Bush to launch himself into office. Savage used this concept in his radio program and in conducting his first of four hugely successful compassionate conservative conventions by that name prior to George Bush appearing on the national scene, by the way. I guess people love my show, he says, because of my hard edge combined with humor and education. Those who listen to me say they hear a bit of Plato, Henry Miller, Jack Kerouac, Moses, Jesus, and Frankenstein. I pull many of my life experiences, including that of father, son, husband, brother, ice cream factory worker, busboy, lifeguard, writer, scientists, etc., says Savage. Savage is currently syndicated on nearly 400 stations. So that's that. The bank bailout fiasco is not over. With the push for stress tests for banks, it brings up the question if more bailouts are on the way. Joining us from the Heritage Foundation is Brian Darling to give us an update on this and other issues.
Thanks, Michael. Senator Barack Obama stated in January of 2006 about the nomination of Samuel Alito to be in the Supreme Court, quote, "I believe firmly that the Constitution calls for the Senate to advise and consent. I believe it calls for meaningful advice and consent, and that includes an examination of a judge's philosophy, ideology, and record. Conservatives agree with the Senator Obama of 2006 and hope that President Obama's nominee to replace retiring Justice David Souter in the Supreme Court receives a detailed examination of his or her judicial philosophy and record. A nomination should be pressed by the Senate Judiciary Committee about the proper sources of law for judges, including whether justices should look to international law. A nominee should also be asked whether the Constitution is a living document growing to encompass new rights such as gay marriage. A nominee should be asked if the Supreme Court should protect the right to keep and bear arms and the right of the people to be secure in their property against government takings except for honest-to-goodness public uses. The Treasury Department has conducted stress tests on 19 of the nation's largest banks as part of the Troubled Assets Relief Program, TARP, the bailout of Wall Street. The purported reason for these tests was to analyze the capital needs and balance sheets of the banks with significant assets. A model was used to see if the banks could withstand future pressures over the next 2 years and to see if these banks could survive under further downturn of the economy. Well, Senator Jim Bunning stood up for the taxpayer, and he told Human Events, "Treasury Secretary Geithner knows that Congress will not approve another bailout. He's using these stress tests as a means to create more urgency in order to justify the need for another government handout to his buddies on Wall Street. I can assure you that I will do everything I can to see that they don't get one more dime of taxpayer money. Cheers to Senator Jim Bunning for standing up to Secretary Tim Geithner and the Obama administration, and cheers to members of Congress who are standing up against the bailouts.
What do you think of the chances of another bailout for these banks?
Well, Senator Jim Bunning of Kentucky and the American people are against bailing out Wall Street. They're against giving more than the $700 billion that has already been given away to Wall Street. So there's an uprising in the American public, an uprising with the taxpayer tea parties that is firmly against it. But still, you have entrenched interests in Washington, D.C. that want to keep bailing out Wall Street, want to keep bailing out bad decisions, and the lobbyists are pushing for further handouts to continue the bailouts. But I really believe that if the American people stand up, they can stop the bailouts and make sure no more money is given away to Wall Street.
You've heard about another entitlement plan coming along?
Sadly, Washington is creating yet another new entitlement program. President Obama's recent plan to transform the structure of higher education financial aid would create yet another entitlement program. The practical effect of the proposed changes would be make the U.S. Department of Education a monopoly in the student loan industry. This is a controversial measure, and that's why congressional leaders may use special procedures as part of the president's budget to force this measure through as part of a reconciliation measure. Taxpayers should demand to know how the administration can justify creating yet another entitlement program that will inevitably expand over the next few years in the face of historically high federal deficit and this year's record $1.8 trillion deficit.
How in the world can we afford this?
The money that's going to the new entitlement program and the money that's going to bail out Wall Street is coming from the taxpayer. And what's happening is they're using these taxpayer dollars, they're treating it like a credit card where they're paying now huge amounts of money in the trillions, $1.8 trillion they're going to heap on in debt for this year, and our future generations are going to pay for it. Our kids and our grandkids are going to have to pay the bill for the bailouts of Wall Street and this massive new education entitlement program where the federal government will become the sole lender.
Brian, darling, thanks for being on the Savage Nation. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.